Blue Dot, Episode 18, Juno and Jupiter.
This is Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schlom.
And I'm Matt Schiltz, and today we're going to Jupiter.
We're talking about Juno, the first spacecraft to orbit Jupiter since the Galileo mission from 1995 to 2003, and it's had its orbital insertion maneuver planned for 4th of July, coming right up, which also means it'll be the second orbital mission at the largest planet in the solar system. Jupiter, it's an extreme environment for spacecraft. It's got intense radiation belts, a powerful magnetic field, and we're going to find out how you engineer a mission to survive these extremes and what the scientific objectives are for Juno. And Juno, by the way, if you don't know your mythology, was the sister and wife, that's a little weird, of Jupiter in Roman mythology, and she had the power to see through clouds. So she could keep track on, you know, what her husband was doing and his dalliances with, you know, Callisto and all those other...
Turns out he did all kinds of bad stuff.
He was not, you know, he was a badly behaved god.
You were talking about the extreme environment of Jupiter, and it's the biggest planet. It's got this severe radiation belt, and sometimes it takes an extreme craft to handle it. So this thing is... hauling. It is going very quickly.
The fastest moving object ever.
Created by humans.
Yes, yes. It's going to be traveling at 130,000 miles per hour compared to Earth. So that's way faster than anything we've ever created. Faster than the Voyager spacecraft, faster than New Horizons. Those go about like 40,000 miles per hour just for comparison. Way faster than a speeding bullet.
Faster than a speeding bullet. And it's going to take very high-res images of Jupiter, and we're going to get all kinds of cool data from this. And we're going to hear about that from some of the guys who are, designing that mission.
Yeah, we're going to be talking to Phil Valick. He's one of the investigation leads for the instruments aboard Juno, and Randy Gladstone. And they're two of the scientists at the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, Texas. So let's talk about Juno. Our first guest is Phil Valick. He's an investigation lead for one of the instruments aboard Juno, and he's going to tell us about this remarkable spacecraft and the engineering aspects of it. Phil, let's start with the basics. Give us a sense of the size of the Juno spacecraft.
Well, when you look at Juno, what you see is the central spacecraft and then these three wings that are coming out, and these three rings are where the solar panels are. The diameter of the spacecraft is about 25 meters, or about the length of an NBA basketball court. The spacecraft itself is about 4.5 meters tall, so it's a pretty large spacecraft.
Now, unlike Voyager and Cassini, this design's a bit of a throwback to the old Pioneer-class probes in that it spins. Can you explain to us why you wanted to go with a spinning spacecraft?
So a spinning spacecraft is naturally stable. It's like throwing a spiral at a football. And it's very important for us, since we're a solar-powered spacecraft, to keep pointing towards the sun. So that stability is very important. Also, since it's a spinning spacecraft, it allows all of our instruments that kind of look radially out in the spacecraft a chance to look at the at Jupiter, at the planet. So we spin with a 30-second spin period. So every 30 seconds, everyone gets every instrument gets a chance to look at it. Whereas if you were a three-axis stabilized spacecraft, which is nice, one instrument or the subset of instruments gets the stare, but if you need to look around, you need to have either some kind of actuators or some kind of mechanism to move it around. So there's a little bit of trade there. Since no one gets to stare at it, you get a reduced duty cycle, but everyone does get a chance to look at it.
And what kind of spin rates are we talking with Juno?
So we're spinning right now at 30 seconds to go once around. And part of our approach phase, we went a little bit slower. It's like a one-minute spin phase, but we're going to be spinning at this 30 seconds through the whole prime mission now.
Now, you mentioned solar power. Let's talk about that. Unlike previous missions out to the outer solar system, Juno's gone solar. And what kind of arrays does it use, and what kind of power can they generate? Because it's a long ways out of Jupiter. You don't get that much sunlight out there.
You're right about that. So Juno is the farthest spacecraft from Earth to use solar power. We have about 60 square meters of solar panels, which is a lot of area. When we did our Earth flyby, we could produce like 12,000 watts of power. Actually, for the flyby, we actually turned off a number of the solar panels. That would have been too much. But the intensity drops off as 1 over R squared, and since we're about 5 AU out, that's 1/25 the power available. So we're only getting about 400 watts at Jupiter. That's not a lot of power in the grand scheme of things, so that's why we need such a large array, and we have to be very careful about how we use it. So anytime we turn instruments on or off, we have to track it very carefully.
Let's talk about instruments. First of all, tell us about yours, JADE, right?
Mm-hmm. So JADE is the Jovian Auroral Dynamics Experiment. What we do is we measure the low-energy ions and electrons, the plasma around Jupiter's magnetosphere. So a plasma, it's this heated gas of ions and electrons, and these are driving a lot of the dynamics of the system. So when you see the beautiful aurora, it's a result of the plasma dynamics going through.
This is Blue Dot. I'm Dave Schlom, and we are talking about the Juno mission to Jupiter with scientist Phil Valick from the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, Texas. Tell us about the other instruments on board.
Okay. So I said JADE, we measure low-energy particles. We have also another instrument called JEDI, which is the Jupiter Energetic Particle Detector Instrument, which measures the higher energies, ions and electrons. So those two instruments together measure the whole spectrum. There's an instrument called WAVES, which measures the plasma waves in the Jovian magnetosphere. And so if you understand the waves, you can learn about the dynamics and the, some of the energization processes, what's heating and causing the dynamics in there. It measures the waves in both electric and magnetic fields. We have an instrument called JIRIM, which is the Jovian Infrared Auroral Mapper. It's a camera, but it uses infrared to map the aurora of Jupiter, and it also measures the thermal emissions from the whole planet. UVS, the ultraviolet imaging spectrometer, this looks at the aurora in UV light. This will tell us a lot about not just the aurora, but also going on the upper atmosphere and the particles that are causing this. We have the magnetometer. When you look at a picture, if you see a picture of the Juno spacecraft, one of the wings looks a little bit different. There's like a triangle structure at the end, and that's our magnetometer boom. And so we are measuring the magnetic fields at Jupiter. This is important to understand the dynamics of the plasma because the magnetic fields help confine and direct where they're going. But it also lets us learn about what's going on inside Jupiter. Let us study the magnetic fields and hopefully understand better what's creating them and those processes. And we have an instrument called MWR, which is the microwave radiometer. It measures the thermal radiation coming from deep underneath the clouds of Jupiter. So here we're looking down below the cloud tops. This will tell us, one of the big questions we're looking at is how much water is there, what's going on underneath the clouds. Then we also have, it's kind of a long list, we have an instrument called gravity science. So we, from Earth and for a long time, we can see the tops of the clouds. We don't know really much at all what's going below them. And so with the gravity science, we can get a measure of what's going happening underneath the clouds. And by looking at Doppler shifts as the spacecraft goes around the planet, we can measure changes in the gravity field and get a picture of what's underneath the clouds. And then the last instrument on there is something called JunoCam, which is a camera that will be taking pictures of Juno. But one of the things that's really neat and unique about it is it's going to be we're going to have a lot of public participation with it. So we're asking the public to participate, not help us planning, figuring out where we're going to point it, have discussions on what we're seeing, and even some help processing the data. It's going to be out there, and there are some very talented amateur astronomers, and can't wait to see what they do with this data.
For people who are interested, where's the best place to go? What website should they go to check this stuff out?
So if you want to learn more about Jupiter, you go to about Juno, go to missionjuno.swri.edu, and there's information about the mission, about the instruments, all kinds of good background information there. Not only that, but there's also, you could always go to nasa.gov/Juno, and then we have a number of other feeds. We've got a Twitter feed and a Facebook page. So there's a lot of good information out there.
Jupiter has a powerful magnetic field and radiation belts. How do you go about protecting the sensitive electronics on all those instruments you just described?
So it is a very challenging mission because of that. Jupiter is a very tough place to go. one of the things that helps is our orbit. Since we're coming so close, we're hopefully going to be going underneath the worst of the radiation belts and coming out, at least at the beginning of the mission. As the orbit processes over a lifetime, it's going to change and we'll get deeper and deeper into it. But the real thing that we're doing is using we have a large titanium vault. And this is right underneath the high-gain antenna. And inside there, everything that can live in there does, all electronics. So our computers, our power supplies, our avionics, that's inside there. And that knocks down, they'll have to survive 25 kilorads of radiation, which is still a big number. We're talking, many hundreds and hundreds of dental x-rays there. Outside the vault, though, a lot of instruments still need to be there to make the measurements. There are sensors out there. So what has to be outside does, the sensors, the cameras, just the part that needs to be. Outside there, they're going to be experiencing something like 11 million rad, a much very dangerous number. It's very hard to deal with. So we're always worried about weight and mass on missions, so they have very selective shielding. There's a lot of design work gone into it to put as the material just where you need it and nowhere else.
Now, on July 4th, when Juno enters orbit, it's going to be one of the fastest moving objects ever built by humans. Give us a sense of how fast it's going to be going and why.
So it will be the fastest human-made object. It's going to have a speed of about 160,000 miles an hour. It comes by there. Largely, it's because you have this enormous gravity well of Jupiter's are coming by. What's kind of interesting right now is that we are both Jupiter and the Juno mission are in orbit around the sun. It's just that Jupiter is moving a little bit faster and it's catching up to us. When it gets there on July 4th, our big job is slowing down enough that Jupiter's gravity can capture us and keep us. So that's why we have this 35-minute main engine burn. It's going to slow us down enough so that we can fall into the gravity well of Jupiter and stay there.
And what time does that happen on the 4th?
It happens at around 8:30 p.m. Pacific time.
And for you personally, what excites you most as we get close now to that time of orbital insertion?
So, the big thing is we're just going to Jupiter. It's a pretty amazing place. Everything about Jupiter is just enormous. As I've worked with Jupiter, one of the things you learn is you run out of ways to say the word big. It's got a big planet. It's got big magnetic fields, a radiation belt. It spins very fast. So the science there is going to be something completely unique. And then the other big thing is we're going someplace no one has ever gone before. We're going to be flying over the poles of Jupiter very closely, and there has never been a spacecraft there. So we're going to be seeing stuff for the very first time, and can't wait to see what we see.
And to give our listeners a sense of ginormousness, you could fit 1,000 Earths in the volume of Jupiter.
Yes, and it is big.
Phil, thank you.
You're welcome.
This is Blue Dot, and we are talking about the Juno mission to Jupiter. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation, and this time we'll be talking to Randy Gladstone about his role in the mission and the science behind Juno at Jupiter. And we're back. Next, we're going to talk about the scientific goals for Juno.
Yeah, what we hope to learn about the largest planet in our solar system.
From one of the leaders of the ultraviolet spectrograph instrument on Juno, Randy Gladstone from the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio. Randy, let's start with a little Jupiter 101. Give us a review of what makes Jupiter such an interesting place for investigation.
Well, as you heard from Phil, it's a big, bad planet. It's the biggest planet in our solar system by far. You could fit all the other planets into it easily. And it was the planet that formed first. It influenced the rest of the solar system's history completely, including ours. It sheltered us from a lot of collisions that we would have had. It probably caused a lot of collisions, too, but... It just had a huge influence on the solar system in general, and it's sort of the archetype for planets everywhere. There's a lot of exoplanets been discovered in the last decade or two, and most of them are very much like Jupiter, we think. So if you want to know more about planets, you study Jupiter.
What are the main scientific goals for Juno? What do we want to find out about Jupiter?
Well, you'd think we'd know everything about Jupiter because we've been there a lot of times already, but there's a lot of things that were learned from the previous missions that were confusing to scientists. For instance, the composition. We think we had a probe on the Galileo mission a long time ago, went in and measured the abundance of all the species there, but it found a deficit in oxygen. It was much lower than it was expected to be. And they're confused whether they just went into a place where there wasn't much oxygen around in the form of water, sort of a desert area on Jupiter, or if Jupiter's like that everywhere. So Juno's going to find that out. We're also going to determine whether Jupiter has a rocky core at its center. There's different models of how Jupiter formed in the early days of the solar system, and in some models it needs a core, or this core forms first of rocky material, and then it grabs all the hydrogen and helium down on top of it. Other models, they don't need that core. So if there is a core there, and Juno should determine that, we'll know a lot more about how Jupiter-sized planets form. Another interesting question is, you heard about Jupiter's giant magnetic field. We sort of have an idea where that might be generated inside Jupiter, but we don't know where exactly, but Juno's sensitive magnetometer will lay that to rest, too. It'll measure exactly where that magnetic field is being generated deep inside Jupiter. But the more... The stuff I'm interested in is the aurora. The polar magnetospheric regions on Jupiter are pretty stunning. There's been a lot of measurements done of them from Earth with the Hubble Space Telescope, but we don't get a very good look at it because, you know, it's at the North Pole, and you get this sort of oblique view of it from Earth. So you don't see it very well, and there's a lot of stuff we can't see from Earth, like the night side of Jupiter. So I'm hoping we'll get a really good face-on look at the auroras on Jupiter and maybe understand them better.
Now, Juno's going to be the first spacecraft to orbit Jupiter in a polar orbit. Is that one of the reasons for that, to be able to study the aurora?
Yeah, the orbit is very elliptical, and it dives in very close to the sort of cloud tops on Jupiter, only a few thousand kilometers above them, which is basically... flying through the upper atmosphere of Jupiter each orbit. And that was one consideration, and Phil mentioned that the reason for that is to a big reason is to avoid a lot of the hard radiation that is going to kill us eventually. But getting in over the poles helps us look at the auroras really well. And to map out the gravity field and the magnetic field, you have to go in close and cover from pole to pole each orbit in order to build up a map of the inside of the Jupiter as well. So the polar orbit helps in many different ways.
We're talking to Randy Gladstone from the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio about the Juno mission to Jupiter. Spacecraft enters orbit around the giant planet on July 4th. As I understand it, Juno will use two methods to study Jupiter. You'll use gravitational interactions as well as, you know, observations with the electromagnetic instruments. Can you explain that two-pronged approach to us a little bit?
Sure. The gravitational interactions are measured with the GRAV experiment, which is basically the antenna dish that communicates with Earth. And Phil explained it measures little shifts in the velocity between the antennas on Earth and the Juno spacecraft, and those can be worked out into a difference in masses in different layers of Jupiter if you look at them enough times. And we only think those vary with latitude on Jupiter. We don't think there's a large longitudinal variation of the mass distribution. So they'll get a very high-resolution map of Jupiter's gravity field that way. The electromagnetic observations include a lot of instruments, probably the MAG instrument you would consider magnetic, and then a lot of things that look at photons, like remote sensing instruments, such as the one I'm associated with, the ultraviolet spectrograph. But we do other things. Phil's instrument measures particles, which aren't really electromagnetic or gravitational, I don't think. But there's a lot of approaches we use to look at Jupiter. We're trying everything we can think of. We look at photons at many different wavelengths, from the ultraviolet through the visible, through the infrared, and even and microwave and radio photons. So we're giving everything we got as far as science experiments and measurements on Jupiter.
From the images that we've seen from the Voyager spacecraft, Voyager 1 and 2, and Galileo in the 1990s, Jupiter is just a bizarre-looking place. Some of the cloud patterns there don't even look real. It looks like something an artist would paint. Are we going to get really high-resolution imagery from Juno?
Yeah, the JunoCam experiment, which is what Phil mentioned, is sort of a public outreach type experiment. We'll take the best pictures of Jupiter that have ever been made, and it should be very exciting because we're flying most of the time over the dusk side of the planet, just where the sun is setting. So there should be some spectacular views of the clouds as we get in close, and maybe even some stereo, I hope, given the 3D structure of the clouds. Besides just being good for the public, this is a very good science experiment too. The JunoCam has three different colors, red, green, and blue, but it also has a fourth color, a near-infrared color that helps us map out hazes in the auroral region that might be caused by the auroras on Jupiter. So it does a lot of science too.
When will we start getting science and imagery back from Juno?
I think we're already doing that. We've been on approach doing science on our way in, and I think I saw a picture from JunoCam just released the other day. They're going to get a lot better, of course, but because we're still a long way away. But the plan is we first go into two sort of larger orbits around Jupiter after July 4th. That take about 53 and a half days to go around once, and we do that twice. And in the first of those, when we go by Jupiter again, we sort of do checkouts of science. We take sort of half engineering runs, half science runs, where we check out our instruments and also look at the science. And then later in the fall, in mid-October, we're going to start about a year and a quarter of two-week orbits where we go around Jupiter, and every 2 weeks we go in for a close approach and get really good science. And that's going to be an exciting time.
The Great Red Spot is the huge storm, the anticyclone. It's been raging for centuries. It seems to be shrinking recently. Will Juno be investigating that?
Yeah, that's been an interesting change, where it's instead of being this sort of oval-shaped, it's gone more circular recently. And as far as I can tell, nobody knows what's going on with it, but it may be just something it does from time to time. But we have lots of people that are interested in that Great Red Spot. And the trouble is, it's hard to predict where it's going to be, at least when we were planning the mission back in the early days. And we've been working on this for over a decade now, so you just don't know where it's going to be that far ahead of time. So we couldn't plan it out that we would actually go over it. But it looks like we're going to target it in one of the, in the 20s, the orbit numbers, we go up to 30-something, but in somewhere in the 20s, we go close enough that we can just turn the spacecraft and get a good look at the red spot.
How long is the mission designed to last?
It's a little over a year, about a year and a third, I think. So we end somewhere in early 2018, like February 2018 or something, I think. That's the plan. But we get lots of orbits during that time. Like I said, every 2 weeks we go in for another close flyby.
This is Blue Dot. I'm Dave Schlom, and we're talking to Randy Gladstone from the Southwest Research Institute about the Juno mission to Jupiter. Your interest is in the auroras. How are they different from auroras on Earth, or are they the same, or just on a larger scale?
Well, in a lot of ways they look the same, but there's a lot of differences. Jupiter's auroras have a lot of different components to them, including an oval that rotates with Jupiter. The auroras on Earth are sort of sun-aligned, but on Jupiter, they move around with the planet. Jupiter also has auroras due to its Galilean satellites. The four big moons of Jupiter interact with Jupiter's magnetic field and cause bright spots, which are basically auroras that move around as well. Earth's moon doesn't do anything like that, so that's a big difference between the Earth and Jupiter. And there's other differences too, but you know, some of these differences we're just guessing at now because we haven't had a good look at it before. So we're hoping to do that with Juno, and we'll be comparing it with all the things we've learned about Earth's aurora.
Real quick, for you personally, what do you find most interesting about being involved in a project like this?
Oh, it blows me away to think that humans can send something like this to represent us halfway across the solar system and get all this information out of it. It's just amazing.
And once again, on July 4th, the time period for people who want to follow along on social media, what's the best way to do that?
Well, the NASA site, you could probably find out fairly quickly at nasa.gov/Juno, and the mission Juno at swri.edu is a good place to get information as well. But yeah, in the evening in the Pacific time zone, like at 8 o'clock, 8:30, sometime around then, I think, is when we'll hear how it went.
Just in time for fireworks.
Yeah, should be a good celebration out there if all goes well.
Well, Randy, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Well, thank you very much. This has been fun.
So, Matt, on the 4th of July, an American spacecraft will be entering orbit around Jupiter. That's pretty exciting stuff.
That is pretty cool. It'll be fun to watch the fireworks and think about what's actually going on very, very far away, but originated right here in the USA.
You know, for the next year, we're going to see some just amazing images, I'm sure, and find out some really fascinating stuff about an amazing planet, Jupiter, the king of the planets.
And what we heard, you know, and we heard that Jupiter is sort of, it is king of the planets, and it's so similar to so many of the exoplanets that we've been able to find. And so really the images and the data we're getting back from Juno really provide a lot of insight on those planets as well, which we're finding in just tons and tons and tons of numbers. We were just finding all of these new exoplanets, and so really going to glean a lot from this mission.
Just about every star system has a Jupiter-class planet or more going around it.
Thanks to our guests, Phil Balick and Randy Gladstone from NASA's Juno mission.
Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio. You can listen to this and other episodes at mynspr.org. Follow us on Twitter at @NSPRNews and me at Dave Schlom and Matt
at Matt Schiltz.
And I'm reminding you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.